I'm speaking today with Buzz Fulton. It's August 10th, 2004, at about 11 o'clock in his home. Buzz, what I wanted to talk about today was your career in politics. And you said that it began in 1981. And how did it begin?
Well, I guess, I don't remember. Bob Davidson was the mayor then, and somebody, I think it might have been Bob Wilkins, talked me into running, and they just wanted somebody new on there, I guess, and Dick Staub and I were the two, he for another position, started. My wife had worked for the city for a long time, and she warned me not to do it because of the many hours of meetings, and I was probably aware that there would be a lot of meetings, but I didn't realize that you ended up as being a representative of the city on every committee and other councils in the town. I was on the chamber and Northeast Oregon Economic Development Committee as a city rep after I got on. So there was a lot of outside activities besides just the Wednesday night meeting.
What was the nature of your position? Basically, what did they ask you to do when you were first voted onto the
I think
mission?
The council is an OJT type thing. You get the training on the job. The only thing that really gave me any background, and there is a pamphlet out by League of Oregon Cities that says what council people should do, and particularly where it's a city manager form of government, which is supposed to be a weak mayor, strong council form of government. Well, that was kind of the book to go by, and then try to do what you think is best for the community, not what you think you might do.
What was your relationship with the city manager at that time?
Let's see, who was the city manager? I think the relationship was pretty good. The only thing, as time went on, I don't know whether he became paranoid, but he seemed to, if you made a suggestion or said, well, I was over here on Cedar Street and there's some real potholes over there, can the city do anything about it? Instead of him going to the road department and finding out what their schedule was and everything, he'd go and tell them, hey, a council person just complained, you better talk to them. So then you'd get a call from the head of the road department, and that is the function of the council. It's supposed to, the manager's supposed to take those things and do it. So that kind of was a sore point with that particular manager. And then, let's see, while we were there, we had, he quit, and we had another one, Bill Horton, and then as I quit, he left.
So did the role of the city manager change with each person that came through and,
Oh, no, it shouldn't. I think sometimes it tends to, particularly when councils get into the micromanaging of the city business. Everything should be done through the city manager, and then if you don't like the way he does it, you fire him and get another manager. Mm-hmm. And then we had a interim manager for about a year and a half, from the Dalles. He'd been city manager in the Dalles for about 20 years. When he retired, he just filled in around the state. And we tried to get him to stay, but his home was in the Dalles. He was a real good fellow to work with. Mm-hmm. And then about the time I quit, I think we hired another city manager, and he now is runs the airport in Pendleton. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of procedures did you go through for your candidacy? Did you do radio or put signs in the yard, or what kinds?
It was pretty low key for me. I think I made several radio spots, and then had some ads in the Observer that were, maybe 3x5, good-sized ads, and mm-hmm. just was low-key, kind of a little bit about me. I did nothing in terms of what right now I really hate in politics, biting the other guy and mm-hmm. trying to tear down your opponent as opposed to saying what you intend to do. Mm-hmm. And you can't make any rash promises on what you're going to do on local government, I don't think, because most of that is the day-to-day management. We did get into some major things when they remodeled the whole street, the state highway.
What happened there?
Well, let's see, that would have been in about, 83? Anyway, that was a state highway, US 30 is the main street, Adams. And so they came in and wanted to redo the street. Well, we figured it'd be a good chance to upgrade the downtown, so we went along, and it was all, they tore the street clear up, down to base, took out sidewalks, ran into a little trouble because most of the downtown old-time businesses had those metal doors in the sidewalks, and that emptied into their basement, and it was the way they got deliveries. Well, that kind of, some of them had to be closed up, and then some of them were saved. I think the one by Rexall Drugstore is about one of the only ones. But anyway, it was kind of a major disruption to the downtown businesses. But
how did the downtown business owners react to that happening?
Was there? I think there was mixed feelings. We got in trouble and accused of ruining their business by three or four, but most of them were about ready to want something done because there had been so many asphalt lifts put on the street by the state that some of the curbs was only a couple of inches high. Mm. And there was no access for wheelchairs on the corners. And so when they took it clear down below grade, and a lot of the businesses were innovative in that they changed, and every city tried to clean up the alleys so they could have access from the alley, and some of them painted footprints on the side of the wall and said come around to the alley and different things.
Was that the entire downtown?
Yeah, it went from, it started about at the Greenwell Motel or Oak Street Mobile, right in there, and then went clear to, it went to the underpass. I think it went a block past the underpass because that was changed, the highway in from Island City. That was when we changed the street over to Washington to the three-lane, middle turn lane thing. And there was not the five-way stop like there is now. And I remember we had a big argument with a city engineer over that. They didn't want to change that to a five-way stop, said it would block traffic. But it worked out pretty well, really. Moves the traffic pretty good. But we got the traffic lights in, and then I think one mistake, city council, there was a lot of planning done between the city council, the state highway engineer, Joe, can't think of his last name right now, he was a neat guy to work with this engineer, and we had a lot of input on what was to be done, and Mike Becker Construction got all the sidewalks.
So what was the procedure for doing the downtown? First, they just dug everything up, or what was the arrangement?
They tried to go about a block or two blocks at a time, and they ran into problems. First off, right by Foley Building and the City Hall. In the way down deep, there was no base, and it was just a deep mud hole. Probably, I don't know, they had to go down 5-6 feet deep to put in a base. So that was the first kind of delay. And then it was torn up most of the summer, all right, as I recall. Probably early spring also. And then, of course, they poured concrete, and that's where we kind of got talked the state into footing the bill for the colored crosswalks. And one mistake in hindsight is always 20/20. You know, I don't like the street lights that we ended up putting in. We wanted better lighting, and of course they do light up well, but I kind of like the old antique ones, I think Don Keeling rustled up one for over there in front of where the chamber is now for the fire station, the museum, and Baker City put those in, and I think they're real attractive, and they give out enough light. So, anyhow, and then the other thing that I'm kind of disappointed in the way it turned out is the roughness of the concrete, particularly in front of Goss's. That's really worn bad. I don't know whether it was the fault of studded tires, combination of that, and whether it was good or bad concrete, I don't know. But anyway, I think it wore a little excessive, and I don't know what they can do now other than start again with a bad idea of a layer of asphalt. That would make it nice and smooth, but then it starts building up, and then you run out of curb.
So you said that shopkeepers were pretty innovative in getting people to come to their businesses. Did people keep going downtown even though it was torn up?
I think so. There was probably greatest crowds downtown was when they tore down the Sack Hotel, of people coming and watching, and same thing with
was that
the construction.
This time or?
No, that was way before.
When was that, in the 40s?
No. Well, I don't know. It was in the 50s or 60s, maybe.
Why did they tear the secretary down?
Oh, it was really well built. They had a hard time tearing it down, but it wasn't profitable for the owners. And there was the Legion Club and a barber shop and a restaurant and KLBM radio and that was in the ground floor, and then, of course, the rooms were older. It was built in the late 20s. So rather than updating it, another hindsight, it would have been nice if they'd have kept it, because it was a real interesting, well, it matched the annex. Mm-hmm.
So you said people came to watch it being torn down?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They worked on it quite a while. But, no, I think on Back to the Street program, there were some of the downtown were really against it because it did disrupt their business. Others were very supportive. I'm not sure what the percentage was. I think perhaps more supportive it than were against it. It didn't really, I don't think it really drove any businesses out of business. But downtown has lost a lot of businesses from that period of time.
So there were more businesses then?
Oh, yeah, there were. There was hardware stores, men's clothing stores. They were kind of starting to go, and I'm not sure what the demise of all of them, the reason were. Just change in small town culture, I guess.
This was before the mall was there or anything?
No, the mall was in when we did the downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Had been in. And now there, that was another thing that we did talk about was changing the entrance to the mall because of a fatal accident on the highway there where the traffic light is, and now they're doing it. So I don't know what really was the reason for the downtown to kind of disappear, but it's done that in other small towns too.
Do you see it revitalizing now?
I think it's better than it was 2-3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think makes a good community?
Well, I think the first thing is that if you can get a consensus out of the major population of the community, what the goals might be for the community, and not have them fighting each other,
mm-hmm.
Is the first step to success. I think Baker City is a pretty good example, and the Dalles is another good example, I think, of towns kind of hitting rock bottom financially, and people finally decide, hey, we better do something, and we better do it together, and they kind of bring it back. I don't know if you've been to the Dalles lately, but downtown, both two-way streets, most of the buildings are pretty well full, and they've capitalized on the Lewis and Clark thing and have murals on the sides of all their buildings, you know.
Do you think LeGrand needs a theme?
Yeah, they've been working on that for 40 years, as long as they have for the library.
So what kind of themes were they trying to develop?
Oh, they were, what the logo at one time was Hub of Eastern Oregon. I think they had a wheel and showed LeGrand as the center, and then they've changed, and then they had a study on whether a conference center would be like a you know, an asset to the community, and was it Cogan and Sharp, I think, did the study and said LeGrand wouldn't support a convention center, but it probably would some kind of a smaller conference center. So we looked at them, and that was during when I was on the council too. And
this was in the 80s?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't have any money, and somebody offered us property out by the Pony Soldier, and but no money to build it, and motels didn't want to increase the motel tax, and so finally the state came along and was going to build a new armory, and at that time the commanding general of the guard in Salem had been in the unit in LeGrand, and he kind of liked LeGrand, and he got the idea of maybe combining it with some local funding and to build a conference center and kind of add some amenities to the armory. And so we started on that track. Well, immediately there was kind of a split in the community, and other people thought, no, they didn't want anything to do with the guard, and so they had other meetings, and that's when I'm saying that we need to work together. And so that kind of divided the community in a way, and they couldn't raise any money either, and the other group, and so we went ahead, and it's been kind of an uphill battle to get that done. And
so that was started way back in the 80s, and the conference center was finished, what, 5 years ago?
Yeah, about mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. So it was a long-term thing. And that was one of the things that was divisive in the community, and then not a complete agreement with the remodel of the street mm-hmm. community. And
what other kinds of debates besides those two do you remember
during
your service?
Well, not so much during the time I was on the council, but there's been a long-term battle up until maybe previous president of the college, Dave Gilbert, that there's always been a divide between the college community and the downtown.
Why do you
They've
think that
never
exists?
Been real supportive of each other until the last 10 years. And it's getting a lot better, and it better be, because the college is a major contributor to the economic welfare of the community. And
why do you think that split was created or created itself? Or do you remember?
I don't know. Looking back 50, 60 years, ago. The community was really, the majority of it was railroad, train crews, and then they had the back shops and repaired engines, and it was, the biggest employer in Union County. And the college was just a thing that LeGrand kind of lucked out and got it, instead of the tuberculosis hospital that went in the Dalles. And so there was kind of that economic, social divide between the laboring group that was the total community and the academic bit of the college. Although the original staff at the college remained for clear into the 40s, it was pretty stable staff. So there was kind of that divide as I see it, and I don't know why. And it took a long time for that to get over, and because the community really was caused by the railroad. Mm-hmm. And that's what built LeGrand.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the five-way intersections are in there.
Why is that?
Well, Old Town started up on C Avenue, was where John Brown started LeGrand. I guess he was one of the first men. Anyway, they laid all the streets out north and south, east and west. Well, the railroad came through, and they came down the canyon from the river, and they wanted to go as straight as they could to get on to Ontario. So they went diagonally across the valley to Union and up Piles Canyon. And so then the community started building up next to the railroad. So then the streets there were run parallel with the railroad. And so then when the towns met at about Washington, in there they start coming in with all those angled streets.
I wondered about that.
it wasn't very good planning. And but otherwise, if they had, they'd have had crossings at angles to the railroad, which was a bad one. The highway that went out to Island City went over the railroad tracks before the underpass. And so it went over at an angle to the railroad. And people didn't always look back. Mm-hmm. And a lot of cars got hit. Mm. Of course, there was no crossing arms or no signals or anything then. Mm-hmm. And of course, that was quite a bit of travel on Highway 82. So that's why they put the underpass in there. Mm. And then the other one, the viaduct here on 2nd Street, there was an old one there, and it didn't line up with the streets. It was offset a little. And then when they built the new one, they had to try and line it up. Hmm. Yeah, so that's kind of why the city got the five-way intersections.
Fascinating. What about the entrance into town?
From the west?
From the west.
That pretty much had always been the same as far as I know. I think there was an old bridge over the Grand Ronde. Well, I know there was two old ones before they put the freeway in, but they were down lower. Well, there was one down low, and then Ordell Bridge.
Ordell Bridge?
Ordell, yeah, Ordell. That was mm-hmm. kind of, and they had, there was a mill at Perry. Sawmill, and then there was another mill out by the fairgrounds. That was early on. And in fact, when we first lived here, it was Bowman Hicks Mill, and then Stang's Mill. A whole bunch of mills around Union County, sawmills.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you remember going out to the sawmill?
Unfortunately, I worked in sawmill.
Which one?
At Boise Cascade. When I first got out of the Navy, I worked there in winter. And probably one of the better paying jobs, but I hated it the worst.
Why is that?
It was so repetitive. They were in a...
What was your job?
Furniture factory then. They made dressers and stuff, parts for them for... assembly by, I think, Wards and Sears. My first job there was off bearing on a resaw machine with little drawer fronts about a foot and a half long and 8-10 inches wide, stacking them on a pallet all day long. Asked for another job and got a job feeding the planer, which was a lot more work, paid nickel more an hour.
So what was your salary?
Oh, I don't even remember. It was hourly.
Mm-hmm.
But that would have been 48. So pretty good money. Guys had worked there for years too. And then was that? I think that was right. Yeah, I didn't go back to school then. I worked 2-3 other jobs.
What other jobs did you work?
Oh, surveyed for Union County, carried mail.
Where did you survey?
All over Union County. Like all the county roads, Godley Lane and out by Elgin.
How was surveying in those days different than it is today?
It was all just with a transit rod for measuring and no electronics. Write everything down in the book and, you know, try to look for hubs on previous surveys that had put them in the ground for markers. And you'd find a lot of discrepancies out in the county. You know, people would say, well, there was a hub in their property down here, but if you went from a different one, it didn't come out the same. So I think there was a lot of work for surveyors in redoing property lines.
Can I go back to the sawmill for just a minute? Mm-hmm. How many people worked at the sawmill at that time?
Several hundred. Let's see, when I worked there, it was Stang's sawmill, and then it went to two or three other owners before Boise Cascade. Mm-hmm. And it was, in today's technology, it was pretty primitive machinery on as far as the main carriages were, you know, and there wasn't any electronic computer control.
So the logs would come in, and what would happen?
And they'd have a guy put that'd have to jockey him into the carriage, and then they'd dog him down, and then the sawyer would start, you know, moving the carriage. And
let's start with the sawyer again.
The sawyer really could make break the mill the way he cut each log, because he had to just eyeball it and do it the way he thought best. And then, of course, it was all steam-powered then. There was a big steam boiler and a giant flywheel in there that ran pulleys, and then that went out through the planer, and each planer had built pulleys. And to stop the thing, you had to go pull a rope down to take the pulley off the track and crank the lumber out. So it was Boise Cascade and the other mills really modernized. I wouldn't know what to do over there now. But
were there a lot of GIs working?
Yeah, there were quite a few who came back.
So this was an entry-level kind of job for a GI at the
time? Pretty much, uh-huh. And some of them stuck it out, stayed with all the mill changes.
And you said how many mills were operating in Union County at that time?
Oh, man. Well, then later another job I worked as parts man for Caterpillar Tractor, and all the loggers came in there, and all the little gypo mills. There were probably a couple, three in Elgin, and or three or four around there. Cove had some. North Powder had a couple.
So that was the main industry besides the railroad, was the mills?
I think, yeah, and then that was part of railroad's business, was hauling logs. There was a, way back, the Hillguard camp up there, Camp Elkanah, that the church runs, that was a logging camp. And there was a railroad came down from there to Hillguard, and then Union Pacific sent their engines and crew up to pick up the logs. And I remember my dad liked to get that trip called Hillguard Logger, because it was usually a daylight trip, and he was in and out the same day. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
So then, besides surveying, what else did you say you were doing?
Oh, then I worked Caterpillar Tractor, parts man. And what? Oh, then I had a Baker Nehi bottling distributor ship here, hauled pop out of Baker, and then I sold pop up the branch, Joseph Enterprise, Wawa, and went to Union Cove, Imbler.
With a truck?
With a truck, yeah. Hmm. Peddling pop, did that.
So you peddled it to stores? Or?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And then...
So did you have to sell each store an individual supply of...
Yeah.
And it was up to you to...
Just had a route that I traveled summer and winter. And
what kind of pop did they have?
It was Baker knee-high.
Mm-hmm. So orange crush?
Orange and strawberry. Root beer. Hmm. Royal Crown.
Was that the most popular
brand? And it was
brand?
All... No, Coca-Cola was probably more popular then. It was bottled in Baker. I had a warehouse here in LeGrand, and they'd bring a freight truck over, and we'd unload it, and I'd load it back on the truck I had and deliver that. See, was that... and then after that, another guy and I bought a service station. Had that for 8 years, and then that's when I went back to school. That's what this guy outlines in that portrait in Observer, that when I was on the council, I wanted to know everything I did. And mm-hmm. I have to go back and read it every once in a while to remember what I did.
So I guess we'll skip forward again to your work with the city politics. Talking about making a good community. At the time, it sounded like LeGrand was at the time that the streets were being redone, et cetera. It sounds like LeGrand was flourishing. Can you think of reasons why? There were good times and bad times. What made the good times good and the bad times not so good? And what was going on that would create this community?
Well, I don't know. That's a tough question. I think everybody in the 70s and 80s had a job. Jobs were plentiful. It was kind of, I think, the attitude of the plain working guy was, I can always find another job, if this one doesn't pan out. There were other businesses in town then that were still going. The railroad hadn't pulled all their employees out.
When did the railroad pull their employees out?
Well, it had just been a steady reduction. Started when, it probably started back when they did away with steam engines and that closed the back shops.
When was that in the Grand? Do you remember, in the 50s or earlier?
Yeah, it would have been in the 50s. And they worked with skeleton crews, and then as the back shops closed...
What do you mean by back shops?
Well, they were all on the back side of the railroad track, so they called them that. There was a big roundhouse and a big mechanical building and a turntable and to turn engines and a lot of side tracks. Well, they're still in, but there was what they called the rip track, and then they had an ice track where they iced cars and... So as that stuff faded out, it went. The attrition was not all at once. They didn't just move everything up. As technology changed, did away with steam engines, took down all the coal chutes. They had converted to oil burners, even on the steam. And then the diesels came in. They took out all the water tanks because they used to have water for steam engines. So that depleted 200-300 people from the railroad. When those all disappeared, they still had passenger trains. Those crews were out of Portland, Pendleton, and not LeGrand, but the freight crews were still here. Then you got to remember that a regular train crew consisted of an engineer, fireman, three brakemen, and a conductor. Well, then they started cutting out brakemen, maybe going with two brakemen. Then pretty soon they started cutting out more brakemen. And
how could they do that? Didn't they need
just
them,
on the economy of running the railroad, and also on technology of trains were different, braking systems were better. They didn't need the brakemen to ride the top of the train. So,
what happened to these men who've been working on the train? Did they stay in the ground, or did
they
leave?
Well, some through attrition, just retirement. Others went for other jobs. Then they started with the engine crews, and now they run all their trains with an engineer and a conductor. No firemen, no brakemen. So you got two people, and I understand they're probably, if you're looking at running them just with an engineer, and then they stretched out, they can go farther, they can haul more, and they used to more power. So technology has done that.
How did that impact LeGrand when those men were let go?
Well, it just did away with that job. And that was a family-paying job that supported that particular family, and that money was gone. So that was less money for the community. Mm-hmm. And then inflation goes up. Yeah, you know, it's not too long ago the interest rates for a CD was 14%.
Mm-hmm.
Now what is it, 0.08 or something?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, back to the, I don't know what the statistics would be of the, you'd have to look at what the total economic income is to the city of LeGrand, and compare that with what it was then, and the ratio of what the increase in salaries have been from few years back, so it'd be kind of a tough math problem to come up with to see if we really are better off or worse off now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure, you know, that when you could buy a car for $1,400 in 1951, that same car will cost you probably $22,000 now.
What kind of car did you have in the 40s?
Oh, let's see. My first new car, that's why I quoted the 14, was a 1951 Ford, and I think I paid $1,491.33.
Did you buy it
in
LeGrand?
Yeah.
From what, who, what dealership?
Well, it was Walker Motor Company, Ford Garage. It's where that... I think he moved there where the church is on, right across from the railroad on Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
What is that church? There's an auto shop in there.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Part of
What
that,
color? What color was your car?
Black.
Mm.
Two-door. Yeah, that was 51 Ford. Before that, I'd had a bunch of used cars, but that was the first new one.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, you'd have to equate all that to total income versus comparable incomes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure now that the total would far outnumber. Because see, the population in LeGrand has not varied much. It was around 9,000 probably in the early 40s. And it's, what, 12 now?
Mm-hmm.
So, and one thing that's caused that is the city hasn't expanded its city limits. There's a lot of people outside the city limits that still adjacent to the Grand. Mm-hmm. So population in that 12,000 doesn't represent what the 9,000 represented mm-hmm. in the 40s. Mm-hmm. Back to the city council and the concept of LeGrand being one of the oldest city manager forms of government. I think maybe I'm biased in that respect, that I'm a strong supporter of the city manager form of government. I'm not in favor of the direction the council has gone in the last few years in terms of enlarging the council, of having a separate mayor. The idea of city manager and council form of government is the fact that the city manager is supposed to be a person who is trained in that job function. He should have knowledge of engineering principles, it's kind of a tough position to fill because you should know something about engineering, road building, budget making, handling large sums of money, handling personnel, hiring, firing competent people for all departments of the city, water, you know, the whole works. That would be his job. That is not the job of a council. The council should be people who are elected by the members of the city to set policy, decide direction for the city in general, not specifics, set some goals for the city, and clear those, have an understanding with the city manager what you want in terms of those goals, and then see that he enforces it. The council doesn't give direction and tell the road department that they want F Avenue repaired next year. Mm-hmm. You know, those are internal functions.
So when you were sitting on the council, did you feel like the city manager was a strong enough person to be able to make those decisions?
Yes, I think we expected that from the manager.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you didn't always get it, but I mean, that was the direction. And I think that unified the council in a way. And then every council member at that time and even farther back in history had an equal say at meetings and equal vote. The chairman, or which it grew into being mayor, and I kind of objected to that term when I was there, but it came with a position,
I
guess.
Why did you object to the mayor?
Well, I thought it was a misnomer. You should have been just the chairman of the council. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's being looking into semantics too much, but I think that is the way the city manager form of government should be run, is with a, you can call them chairman, president of the council. Those have all been names that these guys have had in the past.
So do you think that LeGrand sort of has a hybrid system right now?
Well, yeah, I think mm-hmm. it's developed into that, because the mayor is kind of a separate entity. It is elected separately. See, mm-hmm. that changed the charter. You had to change the charter of the city government.
When did that charter get changed?
Oh.
In the 80s, or?
Well, no, 90s. Just later than that, whenever they went to, when they went to a seven-member council instead of a five, and elected the mayor, and then of course the good thing in changing that is that they had, they put in there that the mayor, if the mayor, if the person wanted to run for mayor and was on the council, he had to resign his position on the council.
Mm-hmm. So when you
some
were...
cities in Oregon didn't do that, and it caused, well, a real good friend of mine was principal of the high school in Albany, and Albany had a separate mayor. But the guy, they didn't have to resign from the council, so the guy that was mayor had been elected to a term on the council, as well as being elected mayor. This friend of mine ran against him as mayor and won, but the previous mayor still had a term on the council.
Oh, that's
and they just locked horns all the time, and
sure.
It destroyed the functioning of the council.
So when you were elected mayor, did you, you no longer then were a member of the council?
No, no.
Uh-huh.
No, I was, there wasn't a separate mayor. That was just a title.
Uh-huh.
So when I said I kind of objected to that, me being called the mayor, it's a matter of semantics there, because I had an equal vote on the council.
Mm-hmm.
I was just a council member.
Why did they want
I was
you to be
elected mayor?
Mayor
by the council.
Oh, by the
I
council.
Was just
oh.
I was really just president of the council.
Mm-hmm.
Public had nothing to do with electing the mayor until they changed the charter.
Mm.
And it kind of grew from that idea of being president of the council or chairman of the council. What else? That was about the only two titles, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when Bob Davidson was called mayor, but he too was just, and it was usually the senior member of the council. When you had the elections for the five positions on the council, they tried to stagger them so that you didn't have a whole new council all at once. There were 4-year terms and there were 2-year terms. Yeah. And I was elected, and the 4-year terms were the people that got the most votes if there was a bunch running. I was elected 2 4-year terms. So I only had to run twice in 8 years, and was lucky enough to have a pretty unanimous vote on those two elections. Then, with the 2-year terms in there, you got new people, but you still had someone there for a 4-year term.
Mm-hmm.
And so you didn't clear out the whole council all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And that might have been part of the thinking in wanting to get a 7-member council instead of a 5,
mm-hmm.
was so that you had a little continuity over a period of time.
How often did the council meet when you were mayor?
Every Wednesday evening. And going back to my wife's criticism, counting all the other meetings, there was a lot more of them. But anyhow, on the council thing, then now the good part of the way the council is now is that the mayor is separated from the council, and you aren't going to have the problem of a mayor kind of being a council member and getting beat in an election. And I guess they could run again later, you know. But then, and and that part of it is good, but I think it might take away, well, the perceived image that it makes, I think, is that the mayor is a more powerful position than it really should be, mm-hmm. if you're going to stick with a city manager type form of government. I don't know where my wife is.
That's
and
good.